Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to episode number 312 of the Peristyle Podcast. Today is St. Patrick's Day. Happy St. Patrick's Day, everyone. March 17th, 2014. Got a big show for you talking about the first week of USC spring football. Got Dan Weber coming up a little bit later on, and Coach Harvey Hyde in the first segment. Questions, comments, you got any of those, email us, podcast@uscfootball.com, or call us at 206-888-6755. Leave a voicemail. Try to keep it under a minute, or go to peristylepodcast.com. Leave a voicemail right there on our webpage as well. All right, well, let's jump in with Coach Harvey Hyde. What's going on, Coach? How you doing?
Ryan, how you doing, my friend? It's a beautiful, beautiful day in Southern California. And for all of you out there, no matter where you're listening, hang in there. If it's raining or snowing, eventually it'll start. Stop it, and we'd love a little water here in Southern California, but can't really complain about the weather, Ryan.
No, it's pretty good. I just came back from Palm Springs, and you're out there in Catalina. I'm back in Hermosa Beach. It's pretty nice everywhere, so it's not too bad. And before we jump into everything, Coach, just wanted to thank our sponsor, Southern California Tickets, sctickets.com. Is their website, or you can call them at 800-888-7287 if you need tickets for, you want to go to concert, any kind of theater. Of course, sporting events, you can go to sctickets.com, and they will help you out. Well, Coach, but since I was in Palm Springs for my wife's birthday this weekend, I did not get to go to USC football practice on Saturday, which I know you were down there, so I'm sorry I missed you, but I wanted to like get your thoughts, because this is the first practice you've seen under head coach Steve Sarkisian for USC.
You're exactly right, Ryan, and I was anticipating didn't know what to expect, and wanted to go down with a clear head and form my own opinion. I know a lot of people out there are following the progress of USC Trojan football, and I always give you an honest opinion on how I feel about everything, so I'm going to do that again, whether it's negative or positive, but start smiling, everyone. The old coach had a wonderful time down there. First of all, I can enjoy practice because they didn't have the rap music on, okay? There wasn't any music going on. I could pay attention. Players were listening. It wasn't like they were trying to keep beat to music, but it was like a study hall at times where you're out there and you're learning, and then you follow through and understand why you made mistakes. There was a lot of teaching going on, a lot of enthusiasm. And I thought that the players physically looked bigger and stronger than they ever had during the Lane Kiffin era. Now, I don't know if they're eating differently or if they're on a different weight program, which I assume they are, not that the other one wasn't good. But this one certainly does show the difference as far as the conditioning of the players, the size of the players, and how much more physical they look. Now, some players may have lost weight, but they look more physical. Some players, even if they were 300 pounds, gained some weight, but look better with their weight distribution. I thought that when I looked at the couple of the players, especially the defensive line, linebackers, the way some of the receivers were playing and defensive backs and linebackers were playing, I said, hey, now this is the way a USC football team should look. And what really did dot the I was when I saw two recruits there, both five-star recruits, or one of four-star recruits, excuse me. When I saw T.J. Smith there, and I looked at him and I said, now this guy looks bigger than the players that are in uniform. He is one of the biggest men I've seen, and he is a nice kid. Not that they aren't all nice kids, but he's a very physical looking individual, and and this is what I think the program is supposed to look like. These type of recruits coming in that can play, pass the eye test. It's very important that you pass the eye test. And then there are skilled abilities on top of that and learning how to play. I think the freshmen that came in February are adapting, competing. And I was really looking at, excuse me for rambling on. Stop me if you want me
to,
Ryan.
No, you're fine. You're fine, Coach.
But I wanted people to know that I watched George Farmer a lot, because a lot of people saying, what's happening with George Farmer? What's happening? How's he running? Or has his rehab gone well? I think it's gone excellent. He looked great out there running his routes. He looked big. In fact, when I saw him standing next to Darius Rogers, I think he's a little bit bigger and heavier than Darius Rogers. So if that's true, then the receivers are coming along. I watched Stevie Mitchell. He's getting there. He's not completely 100%. That's why they're holding him out. But what does he need to prove? You need him in the fall. The same with like Leonard Williams. He's not going reps, but what does he need to prove? So, and Dawson. Dawson looks absolutely good, too, as far as getting rehab back and bigger. Did not see Walker. I know he was out there, but did not see him to see physically how he was looking. So as far as the team itself, the enthusiasm, I kept looking at Coach Sarkisian to see if there might see a little smile on his face. He was trying not to smile, not to give it away. But I know in his mind he was thinking it wasn't this way at Washington. I've said it 100 times, and I've told everyone out there I wouldn't exchange or change the USC roster with any other Pac-12 team. But they look like football players. This is the way it's supposed to look at USC. Be physical, be aggressive, be nice. The clock on the field indicating running all the time. How much time is left in the period. So if you're a coach and you're coaching, you can look at the clock and you know, oh, I didn't get to this. I've got to get to this during this period because I'm supposed to work on it with the group or the team next period. So, you know, that helps you when you're coaching. And I thought that was great. To see people out there, parents out there, people talking and happy and excited. Tessalone was smiling, which is great. You know, it's just a good feeling to see parents intermingling back and forth. I miss some of the parents, of course, of players that were there before. They're gone. And one thing I really noticed, you always used to hear me be critical about when you make a mistake, take a lap. Well, you know, I used to call that the Pop Warner drill. You don't do that at USC, but you miss too many turns as far as what you need to do as far as getting back in there and correct that mistake and run that play again just because you might have fumbled the football or dropped the pass, take a lap. No, you don't do that at major college football. I didn't see that at all. So that wasn't going on any longer. So it was good. And the practices, 2 hours, it's over. And kids appreciate that when they know when it's going to be over. They can go hard. They know after 2 hours, we've reached our point of learning anything more. Go hard for 2 hours, get off the field, and do what we have to do. So as far as me on my first practice, as far as going out there, these are the things I saw. These are the things I liked. I'm being positive on just about everything I saw, which I can do because that's what I saw. So as we move along, Ryan, with other practices, they're off this week as far as the Trojans. I'll be able to continue with this evaluation.
Oh, we appreciate it, Coach. And the one thing I think we cut out when you were talking about that the big recruit that you saw, what was the name of that? That part cut out.
Mama, Damian Mama.
Damian Mama. Okay, so you saw him down there, and he definitely looks like
I'm gonna tell you what, and that's a man now. I mean, he's 1.5 people. Okay, he's not one person. There's nobody that big. So I got to look at a couple of things. I think the offensive line has to come along a little bit more. They move a lot of players around. A couple of the starters that they think is going to start is not out there this spring. So Jordan Simmons has got to come back and really get into it. Walker's got to come back and really get into it. And I think the tackle positions are both up for grabs. I would be a bit surprised if somebody came in and started at one of the offensive tackles. Wheeler's at one. The left tackle with Banner behind him. And the right tackle is, what's his name, Gertner. He's the right tackle. And I don't remember who played behind him. But I think that we need to get a couple of bar fighters on the offensive line, not country club guys, you know. We got some country club guys there right now. So we need to get a couple of guys that like to go in the bar and have a beer once in a while. Not that I'm advocating these players go out and drink. I'm just saying, you know, it's just the attitude I'm talking about, okay?
Gotcha, Coach.
So, yeah, so that's basically it. And, you know, as far as the first practice, I was there the whole time, enjoyed every moment of it, talked to people, had a wonderful time. It's a positive attitude around there, and it was all work, positive work. And they got better that practice. So I always say every day in every way you try to get a little bit better and better. Well, I think the Trojans did on Saturday.
Well, Coach, you mentioned the that like not doing a lap. I mean, there's certainly some differences. It looks a lot different period-wise, I think, than what we saw from the Pete Carroll days. They're just different kind of periods. Like Lane Kiffin's practices kind of looked similar periods to what Pete Carroll was doing, but a different pace. Now, this pace is fast again, like we saw with Pete Carroll, probably even faster. But they're different-looking periods. They do things differently. It's his own, you know, he's bringing his own style to this. But one of the things is because they go so fast, and Steve Sarkisian mentioned this on Tuesday, they don't really have a lot of time to evaluate each individual play. So if a guy screws up, they're not saying go for a lap. They want him to run the next rep, and then they have to kind of look at the film and you know, correct it later. What do you think of that approach where you're going so fast that you can't really even – it's almost like you can't even coach while the guys are playing because they just have to get the reps in that you can kind of fix it later?
Well, I agree with that. That's the way I used to coach completely all the time. We didn't have time to hold up the whole practice to help one kid. Hey, wait a minute, come back. Let me tell you what you – now you got 100 guys watching. No. Keep it going. Correct off the tape. Correct off the field. Run more plays. Run more plays. Then you got more plays to evaluate on, too. So I agree with that 100%. I mean, coach off the field. Once you get to that point where you're doing team and you want to make it a game situation in the game, you don't stop the game. You don't stop the game and say, I got to coach him up. The game continues. So you've got to do it that way, and you've got to make it game-like conditions. And then you coach it up later off the film. Because that way a kid can really see what he did wrong. And you don't have 100 guys waiting or 50 guys waiting for you to correct one player. So it's really important that you keep it going. That's why you can practice 2 hours. That's why you know you got a lot done and you can get out of there. So, no, I agree with this method 100%.
What other aspect, Coach, you've brought up in the past, and I actually – asked Steve Sarkisian about this when he came on the podcast, and it was about the rehab players. And I wanted to get where your thoughts on what they were doing, because it seems like when there's an opportunity to get mental reps and get on the field and kind of learn instead of, you know, riding a bike or being in the, you know, weight room down below where you can't see anything what's going on, it seemed like these players are more involved in practice.
That used to drive me crazy. When you didn't know where the players, that drove me crazy. You knew that.
Yeah.
That's why you bring it up. I know that. Drove me crazy when I used to see a guy rehabbing, sitting over on a bike, talking with the cheerleaders or whatever he's doing over there, instead of paying attention to what's going on. I wouldn't want to get well. This is a pretty good deal. I sit here, ride my bike, talk to people. I don't have to do anything. But you're not getting any better. You don't even know what they're working on out there. You're not paying attention. I used to see that always on the sideline during a game. Now, here you got me going again, where players weren't even paying attention to what play was being run. Or, you know, they weren't even talking to the coach. They wouldn't even go in the huddle. In fact, no one even knew what play was called to start with to watch it. But normally, if you didn't see quarterbacks standing with a chart, you know, communicating with everybody what play is being called and so on. But yes, you're exactly right, Ryan, and I'm sorry I didn't bring this up earlier. when they go through the walkthroughs, which is like the classroom on the field, rather than in the classroom, you do it on the field. But I didn't believe people could remember in the classroom what you put on the board. You got to come out and do it again anyway, because they don't remember it. So, yes, every time they taught something new and where the groups went, you saw all the rehab players with their groups, no matter what they were doing, watching, listening to the techniques, watching to what the coverages are, watching what the routes would be, watching what the blocking schemes are. So what they're doing is they're learning mentally. They're not going full speed at it, but they're going to hobble through it, or they're going to get it through it somehow so they understand it, where they're communicating with the team and they understand what's going on. I agree 100%, Ryan. That's one heck of a good point.
And one other thing before we get a couple questions, Coach, just about the assistant coaches out there. And you watch different things because you've run practices before. I think you definitely have a different way of watching than me. I want to try to see it through your eyes sometimes, because certainly I think I could learn a lot from that. But the way the assistant coaches were handling what they had to do and practices and how that went, did you like what you saw there?
I did like what I saw. Why? They were trying to beat every player to the next drill. They showed by example. They didn't say, go on down there and I'll meet you down there, and the group would run down there and the coach would just sort of walk down there. Everybody's running where they're running. Everybody's trying to do some drills before the players. They rush to the drill and they push each other around and they have a lot of fun. And, you know, you don't have to yell. I don't hear any yelling on the field. Now, I'm telling Ryan, I don't hear any yelling. It's all teaching. When you're in a classroom, you don't yell at the students to teach. You teach. And if you have a question, raise your hand. That's why I'm here. I want to make sure you understand what we're doing. And that's what I see what's happening out there. A lot of walkthrough, no yelling or screaming. They don't expect the players to know all the things, because it's a whole new scheme. And I think they're teaching it right, offensively and defensively. And I think they're building confidence with their players. Remember, this team won 10 games. These players have won 10 games. I mean, we have never won 10 games at Washington. So you got to have respect for those players, and you got to let them believe that you believe in them. Now we want to take what you've already accomplished and make it better for both of us. And I think they're using that type of approach, Ryan.
All right. Well, great insights there, Coach. Thanks for that. I want to get to a couple of questions if we can. From what you've seen, does Max Brown have a real shot to be the starter this year? That's from Tarek. He wanted to know.
Well, it's a good question. Does he have a real shot? I think he has a shot. A real shot, I think what you have to do to become Max, to become the starter, he's got to be able to prove that he's the better quarterback. Right now, you've got a quarterback that's had 14 starts, 10 wins. And that experience is something that the players understand. They respect him. Most valuable play in the Las Vegas Bowl. So it can't be equal. Cannot be equal. You can't say, well, both quarterbacks are equal. If both quarterbacks are equal, Cody's going to start. It's just a natural thing, because players know who the best quarterback is. They're at it every practice, too, and they see every rep more than we do. They watch it over and over and over on tape, and they know who's the best or who's behind the scenes is getting said, great play. And you need to improve on this in some situations. We don't hear that. We don't know. All we do is watch and be able to determine if he did the right thing. So I think he has a definite chance of starting, and he looks good, and he's bigger and stronger. I think he's really made some great progress, but I think Cody's gotten better too. So I think he has more confidence too in what he's doing. So I think everybody's getting better. And Green, the young freshman that was there, I think he performed better than what I expected him to perform, along with a couple of the walk-ons. I thought threw the ball pretty good. We're not evaluating them as far as who's going to start or who's not going to start, but I think Cody's better. I think Max is better than what he was last year. And I think that Max is going to have to be better than Cody, to beat Cody out. If it's equal, Cody will be the starter.
I agree with you 100% there, Coach. And speaking of the quarterbacks, James had a question. Do you think they'll use Jalen Green in any Wildcat formations and plays next year?
No, I don't think so. I think you'll redshirt him. Why would you burn a redshirt year? I think that I would keep him. I would let him get a lot of reps. But right now, on Saturday, the main reps went to Brout and Kessler. I think he played better than I expected him to do. He's just a young kid that would still be in high school. No, I don't think that I would burn a year to do that. I think I'd let him get better in what he's doing, and maybe someday he could be the heir apparent. So you don't want too many guys too close to their own age group anyway, year-wise, eligibility-wise, and so on, and he'll get himself a nice education. And down the road, if they do decide to rotate some quarterbacks, that's great. But, you know, I'm not big into that rotating stuff. You
right.
hear me all the time talk about that. I'm not big. This is the intramurals, buddy. This is the real deal. You know what I mean? And I'm for getting my best players on the field, all 22 of them, no matter what they want to be. It's got to be on the field to help your team win. So, and I'll tell you what, there are some great players out there, and there's some positions that I think that totally are tremendous. I think the quarterback situation, since you brought that up, to have two people competing like this, they both get better. They both get better because they have to compete every day. And I like it not having three players really competing, but then they don't get as many reps. So not that Max wasn't a great player, but I think it helps Max to go to another school because he wasn't happy there. And you got to have happy players. And also it was good for Brown and Kessler. So it's working out for everyone.
For Jalen Green, I mean, I only got to see him throw that first day on Tuesday. And I liked the ball as it came out of his hands a lot of times, but there was a real, at least the first day, maybe it was first day jitters. I don't know if it changed, but there were some real accuracy problems. I think there was a lot of velocity behind where he's throwing the ball, but there were short kind of, you know, touch patterns that he was whipping balls that could, you know, go over way over the guy's head or skip 5 feet in front of him. So there was definitely some issues there. I don't know if it was first day jitters, but did it look like he kind of got a little bit better throwing the football around on Saturday?
No, I agree with you. I agree with you. You know, he's trying sometimes too hard. You see, you make the comment, who was he throwing that ball to?
Yeah.
And then you also said, there's a wounded duck. and, you know, those things just happen when you're a young player. You know, he's got a lot of pressure on him. But, yeah, I agree with you 100%. But you can't expect him to be at the same level these other two guys are either. So you hug him and you say, hey, that's better than I could do, you know?
Yeah. Well, one last question for you, Coach. This is from Melvin.
No, you can ask me as many questions as you want.
All right. Well, this is the last one we have. We can chat a little bit more. But Melvin said he recently saw that Texas A&M and Pitt both have come out saying that they're going to skip the annual spring game because they get more out of the practice time. How do you feel about the necessity of having a spring game versus using the time to practice and not have a spring game? What do you think Sark feels about this? That's from Melvin.
Well, I don't know what Coach Sarkisian feels about it, but I like it. Let me tell you why I like it. I think you've got to have a game situation before the fall. What I mean by that, I don't know if you have to go as far as staying in the hotel, what a lot of people do the night before, just to go through the whole procedure. So when the fall comes around, it isn't the first time you've done that. A lot of kids out of high school have never stayed in a hotel before, even know what you do in a hotel. Why do you go to a hotel? What type of meetings do you do there? What do we go there for? I think it's important to go through every single phase of what you have to do game day. And I used to do that in the spring. I mean, from headsets, we used to try the headsets out because I want to know how the best way it is to have who upstairs, who downstairs, how we work together, all the phone lines hooked up. There's sometimes our equipment guys got to figure it out, too, what to have on the sideline, what not to have on the sideline, how I like the kids to sit on the bench. When they come off the field, do they sit down or get on one knee? Do they stand? Do I get everybody over there? I want them to go through all that. I want to practice everything that we're going to use on game day, every single thing from warm-ups to the way we go back in the locker room, when we come out of the locker room, what we do when we go back after warm-ups. I want them to have had as many reps at everything we do before it's game day. I mean, I'm talking about coaches, too, but there's a lot of coaches that haven't worked together here on this staff. So we've got to understand how that works. We've got to also work about getting the plays in on time and no coaches on the field whatsoever. But now when you're coaching, you got players on the field and coaches, coaches on the field. So player can look over and you can yell. Coaches got to learn to work off the sideline too on what's going on. Now, I'm not saying you have to scrimmage live if you're talking about that, but you got to practice game conditions. Punt team, got to make sure you have 11 guys out there. Punt return team, all right, make sure you got 11 guys out there. Kickoff team, all these different rotations, and as the kickoff return team goes out there, obviously the offensive team is huddled up getting ready to listen to the play and a play before it happens. And the same thing with the defense. On third down, the defense is getting ready to go out there if they're going to punt the ball, so you get together and you tell them all what the heck you want to tell them before they go out back on the field after the punt. So all of these things need to be practiced over and over and over so that you're good at every single thing you do. And you have officials there, and you make sure it's all officiated. You go through the whole thing. You even take them in at halftime to say, now, when we come in at halftime, this is where you go. You've got so many minutes to go to the bathroom and do what you need to do before the coaches come in and we have our, you know, group meetings and then team meetings. So all of that is very, very important, Ryan. So I think a spring game, now I'm not talking about the scrimmage and hitting part, but the procedures of a football game need to be practiced.
All right, Coach. Great stuff. Thank you very much for sharing the insights. I was learning stuff too, obviously, because I wasn't able to go to this practice. I'll be all the rest of them, but we'll look forward to seeing you out there again. And thanks again for coming on the show and sharing your insights.
Buddy, it's always great to be with you and all of our listeners. We want to thank you very much for your questions, and you can tell the enthusiasm is back on all of our part. And if you're a Trojan football fan, and I know you must be, or you wouldn't be listening. So far, on what I've seen after the third day, I think this team is ahead of last year's team after the third day. So put it that way. And remember, they won 10 games last year.
So not too bad. All right. Well, thanks again, Coach, and everyone else. We'll be back in 30 seconds. We're going to talk some more USC spring football with USCFootball.com beat writer Dan Weber.
Meet us on the other side of the break for more of the Peristyle Podcast. Tickets, tickets, tickets. SC Tickets is your concert, sports, and theater ticket source. We have the tickets you need to any event worldwide. Football tickets are now available. Call SC Tickets now at 1-800-888-7287. 1-800-888-7287. That's 1-800-888-7287. Or visit us on the web at sctickets.com. SC Tickets, concert, sports, and theater. We now return to the Peristyle Podcast and your host, Ryan Abraham.
We are back here at the Peristyle Podcast, joined by USCFootball.com beat writer Dan Weber, who was at the first three USC spring practices. Week one is now in the books. I wanted to get his thoughts on everything that he saw and have a few questions from you guys for him to answer. So, Dan, welcome to the show, and just kind of wanted to check in. And what did you think of the first week of spring football?
Not bad. Not bad at all. I mean, I like the offense. I think the defense, one of the things that was a little worrisome was a team that had gone through, you know, three coaching changes was going to get a fourth. I think one of the things that Sark has done really well is read this team, read these players, understand, what he's going to change, but knowing how they were moving in the right direction in a lot of ways, and I think the updating of the offense, the up tempo, and kind of running the same plays, only running them faster, but running them with wider line splits and things like that. I think that was like the next evolution of where they had to go anyway. So it doesn't look like it's as destabilizing. And I know we all were told that Justin Wilcox is a 4-3 guy coming in here, and now he's not a 4-3 guy, he's a 3 guy. He's looking at a kind of a 3-4 situation, and not all that unlike what they did last year. So I think in both areas, there's not a lot of change that's being made. Just updates and going in the right direction, and doing things that are really suited to the personnel, like the assistant coaches, the ones we've gotten to talk to and close attention to. We've really liked what we've seen. I know the defensive backs, defensive line guys is love. We've got Tim Drevno with the offensive line. They work so far away from us, we don't get to see all that much, you know, up close. But you're hearing nothing but good things. The running backs feel real good about themselves. I think one of the things they feel real good about is they look like they're going to be seams, and they look like they're going to be people in front of them blocking. And you see continuity again from last year to this year. So it's not as different as probably everybody thought it was going to be, including maybe even the coaches. I think it's more of keeping on, and moving in the direction that they were moving at the end of last year.
The pace of practice is something we talked about after day one quite a bit, and I wasn't there for Thursday or Saturday. Did that change at all, or are you still seeing the high speed just kind of coming in and out and not a lot of time to really teach in between plays, but getting in there and running as many reps as possible?
Well, they're doing a nice job of teaching in the pre-practice. They're obviously, as Hart said, they're doing a 45-minute walkthrough each day for practice. So I think that's where a lot of the teaching is going. And you know, instead of just doing drills, they're doing teaching drills early in practice. So, but what they do is once they start going team and once they start going after, you know, offense, defense, even 7-on-7, 11-on-11, there's no break in between. There's nobody staring at a play sheet. There's nobody reading 9 or 10 words off of a wristband. That's all gone. As Cody said the other day, he said, we used to come out of the huddle and we'd have 15 seconds to run the play. He said, now we're calling the play with 23 or 24 seconds left on the play clock. So that's a whole different – so it's that time in between. But I also think the plays themselves, especially for the quarterback, I think the action is speeded up. He's not under the center, and he's getting a read and getting a look very often. In terms of they're throwing a lot of quick stuff, and yet they're also throwing the deep ball. It's kind of an interesting combination of how they're doing it. But as Max Brown was saying the other day, the difference is instead of lofting the ball, and they're really being asked to drive it in and throw it on the money on time in traffic, without this sense of, oh, what's going to happen if we throw the ball to a tight end over the middle? That's what you're supposed to do. Throw it to the tight end over the middle. There's a linebacker nearby. That's fine. Just don't throw it to the linebacker. Throw it to the tight end. Kind of what they're doing, and all of them are doing that. So I'd say they're farther along than probably we would have expected them to be, although the more you think about it, it's not doing so much different that they would have taken a kind of a step backwards as they were learning. And I think a credit to Sark for reading everything in terms of the situation and the transition and really getting it right. And they're obviously teaching it right. They didn't do any outside throwing almost at all in the winter, but they did a lot of walkthroughs and a lot of meetings and a lot of classroom stuff that they really seem to be, right where they need to be.
Quarterback-wise, I wanted to kind of get your thoughts where the battle or the competition stands right now and what you saw from Jalen Green, the incoming freshman, but really, how much Max Brown's done to try to, overtake Cody Kessler, and if that's even a possibility.
I wouldn't think. I like Max. What I would like to see him do, what you would ideally like to see happen, is that Max becomes a quarterback that USC could win any game with, so that you go into next season with two quarterbacks that you feel like you've got a chance to win any game with. It probably would be difficult to see him overtaking, Cody at this point in time after what happened last year with Cody's development, winning 10 games, probably could have won 12. he had a really good year. And obviously Max is coming out of high school, year and a half ago as the best high school dropout quarterback in the country, pro-star quarterback in the country. So you want him to be that good. You want to be able to win games with him. I'm not sure you see a situation where he absolutely takes the job away from Cody. Cody kind of has to give it up, I think, a little bit, and it doesn't look like he's going to do that. I think a lot of these things, what you see is on the quick throws and all that, Cody looks at where he has to throw it, and that, the ball's there. I do think this offense takes as much as Max ran it in high school. I think it takes a lot of advantage of what Cody does well. But I do think that, in terms of the competition, what you want to see is that Max gets, to near the level where Cody was and is going to be. And so you have that sense of, we've got two guys. If you're a USC coach, you look at it and say, we got two guys here we could win a game with, and that's pretty good insurance if you go into a situation like that. And then the other thought about Jalen Green is I haven't seen him play other than, some video and some high school games on TV. Seen him in person, he's way farther along than I thought in terms of, and you don't appreciate arm strength until you see it in person, but his arm strength, his ability to, deliver the ball in traffic, his ability to drive the ball, he's not afraid to, make a tough throw. He's been very impressive. So they're farther along with him, I think, by far than anybody would have had reason to expect. So that's a plus as well.
Defensively, I wanted to kind of see what you felt out there for the first week and how different this 3-4 scheme looked than the 5-2 that Clancy Pendergast ran.
I think it's a little more with the secondary. I think they're definitely trying to they want to be physical and they want to redirect people and they don't want people running free and they're not afraid to come up and play them. Tell you we're not going to let you run loose. You're going to have somebody pushing on you, redirecting you, trying to get you to be in control. I mean, they really, you like that. It looks a little different up front, but not greatly so, because Clancy kind of ran schemes very similar. So what looks different, I think, is Antoine Woods comes in at 310 pounds and looking like he's in just absolutely great shape and wants to, really, really be a factor. Kenny Bigelow, 315, just looks—he looks like he can play. I mean, he looks like he wants to play. Looks like he's grown up. That's how he talks to you. Feels very good about himself. When you look at Delvon Simmons, he was only there 2 days, but we saw him, and you think, gosh, he really is 6'6". Big rangy kid who can run, and we're still not sure what his weight is. So we're seeing some pretty good things, and that's without without Leonard Williams, who's there and, was in pads the other day too, but he's just not going to hit on that shoulder. But he's there for all the things they're doing and all the teaching and all of that kind of thing. So pretty impressive group. Claude Pilon, I think, is learning what it's going to take in terms of, being in shape and being ready to play at this level. But he's a big kid. Probably 300 pounds also, and 6'5", and they got a defensive front that's pretty darn impressive. You put J.R. Tavai in there and Scott Starr on one side, and you got Jabari Ruffin. They've got some athletes and Quentin Powell and how they play that weak side linebacker. You get a sense that this is there won't be a great deal of disruption from where they were at the end of last year to where they're going to be to start the season next year. And then all they got to do is figure out how the heck do you tackle Brett Hundley, and everything's good to go, I think, at this point.
All right. Well, let's get to a couple questions. Let's go. I think we'll go with Stephen Poway. He said Coach Sarkisian seems to be like a happy, quote-unquote, happy medium between the polar opposites of Kiffin, who is all head, clearly an introvert, and Orgeron, all heart, clearly an extrovert. Do you think Pat Hayden wanted someone that was a little more balanced in this way?
Yeah, you know, I think it just turns out that way. I mean, I think that probably there's a comfort level there. And, you know, Coach Orgeron was probably at one end of the scale that a lot of people were comfortable with. And the kids, you know, certainly were comfortable with him. And I think fans were. But Sark is kind of that, yeah, happy kind of, you know, middle of the road sort of a guy. Doesn't look like he gets too up or too down. Doesn't look like he's too much threatened by you know, things that are going on or feeling the need to prove himself and all of that. That's, to me, that's a great thing.
Let's see. And they said, also, Pat Hayden said from the beginning of his tenure as AD that he would stay with the university through the probation period. Since USC is set to go off probation in June, do you expect Pat Hayden to turn in his resignation soon? We all know he did not need to take the job and essentially did it as a service to the university that he loves. Have you heard anything to indicate one way or the other? That's also from Steve.
I mean, that's kind of the sense, I think, of people around the program that you know, that this was a service that he could offer to USC when he was asked by, you know, Max Nikias. And it was done with, as he said, you know, from the very first, that there would be kind of a time limit on how long this would be, and that it would be, you know, connected to the end of the sanctions and all that. So I guess most people have been operating under that kind of an assumption, but I don't know that anybody's been, you know, asking directly, you know, are you going to resign in June or anything like that? I mean, we haven't heard that, but it's kind of been an assumption, I think, that most people are working with, that there is kind of that kind of a time frame, you know, involved in the job. And obviously it's a job where you get a lot of criticism, and it's a high profile, not an easy job, negotiating through the head coach situations in football, basketball, and baseball. Three of the highest profile sports have really had difficult issues and you know, things that, you know, not everybody is thrilled with. So it hasn't been the easiest time. So wouldn't be a surprise if something happened along those lines after the sanctions are over.
Let's see. John had a question. He said, just curious whether the Pac-12 will be retaining or hiring more competent referees. I believe that the Pac-12 remains the most penalized conference in the nation, from John.
You know, the idea of it kind of throws me off when you just talk about, in the same sentence, Pac-12 officials and competent. It's just like I get start shaking, you know, a little bit. I don't know. I wish, but in football or basketball, how it got off the track the way it did, and the fact that they're not terribly trusted, you know, by anybody, is really kind of a shame. But you know, I mean, I respect the heck out of the last couple of supervisors. And, you know, this Tony Coretti, the NFL guy and what have you, and when you talk to him, you really like him and you really think, I mean, he's as good an NFL referee as there is, and does a heck of a job, you know, there, and seems to be on top of things. It's just you wish you had a sense of confidence, and obviously can't throw basketball in there for him, but you wish you had a sense of confidence with both of them, but they've gone to supervisors in both football and basketball, and you know, over the recent years, and things don't seem to have gotten a great, great deal better. They're better. They're better than they were, but they need to be better than they are. And all we can, I guess, is hope and complain. And it was ridiculous for as many Pac-12 teams to be at the very bottom of the NCAA list of most penalized. Obviously, they run more plays, and they're a little more high risk, high reward offenses and things like that. But you just wish you had a confidence level in that the guys calling the game were really in charge of what's going on out there, not look like they're, running for their lives.
All right, and we got one question. Here's a voicemail question for you. Let me play it for you. Here you go.
Hi, guys. It's Sean from Kentucky. I just had a comment that I wanted to make and get Dan Weber's or coach's opinion on. But, I hear a lot of people here in SEC country saying, we should be happy with 7-8 wins next year. And, I just don't see it. I mean, how many teams go through a year that's as tumultuous as what we did with three different coaches and still win 10 games? I don't see it. I don't understand why 8 games should be our ceiling. I honestly think we stroll into that Notre Dame and UCLA game undefeated. I really do. I don't think Stanford is necessarily as good as what they have been. ASU loses a lot on defense, and I would not be surprised at all to, at the end of the year, be playing that Pac-12 championship game to see who goes to the playoffs. That would not surprise me at all, and I would love nothing more than for USC to reach that playoff and essentially flip the NCAA the bird, just to let them know that the King of the West Coast is back. Y'all tried. They tried really hard to keep us down. But, the thing is, the perennial powers in college football don't stay down for long. Thanks, and fight on.
Okay, as an SEC guy myself, probably the last place I'd go to ask for advice on how USC is going to do would be someone from the SEC. I mean, let's face it, they didn't want to face the USC. They didn't want to deal with USC. They didn't want to play USC. And they sure as hell didn't want USC to be the other team in the BCS championship game. That's why they are the smartest people in the world in terms of the people running the SEC. They figured it out. They saw the Oklahoma game and said, that's not such a good thing. If we get to the championship game every year like we figured out we're going to do from now on, what if that USC team shows up? They figured out a way so that USC team wouldn't show up. So basically, SEC people probably don't want to spend a lot of time thinking about USC. My guess would be if you want to take advantage of that, I would. If they really believe, that's how many games they're going to win, take advantage of them. They obviously don't know, and I don't disagree with you. I know people say, oh, you're sunshine pumping or every year, da, da. I mean, I thought they could be pretty good last year, honestly. Turns out, people might say, well, yeah, look what happened. And obviously that was a team that could have been 12-2. And like we were saying, we had 5 questions before the season last year. 4 of them we thought we could answer. The 5th, it was like going to the airport and saying, I wonder if the pilot of my plane is going to be crazy or not. Is he going to crash it? Or is he going to actually fly it? Well, we knew what happened. There wasn't much we could do. The pilot was the pilot. And that was the question that we couldn't answer. But this team probably has more talent than that team. And so I think this team's got a pretty good shot. They figured out a way to kind of negotiate the roster limitations and the issues and probably have a better chance of negotiating that this year than they did last year. I think the schedule sets up pretty well. I mean, I think Stanford got half of their starters gone, offense and defense. That's when I'd want to play Stanford. That's 2 years ago, USC absolutely one of the most disgraceful efforts ever to lose that early season game at Stanford. That's basically set the tone for a disastrous year. Obviously, there's high risk reward in playing them the second game of the year. But I would think that's something USC might want to look forward to, take advantage of, and go from there. But honestly, what guys in the SEC say about USC would probably be just figure it this way: whenever it comes to talking about football on the West Coast or USC, you will be by far the smartest guy in the room, in the state, and in probably seven or eight states just because you know something, okay? SEC guys know football, and they know their football. They just don't know a whole lot about other people's football. And I think it's getting to be a kind of an interesting situation next year because there are going to be four teams in the playoff. And I think they're worried that probably two of them aren't going to be from the SEC. And an SEC team gets in a two-team play or a two-game playoff like that, they may have to actually play two really good quarterbacks, two really good offenses. Uh-oh. Does playing in the SEC get you ready for that? I don't know. I'm not sure Nick Saban knows either. He's starting to change, though. I think the SEC is realizing, you know, where is the future in college football. And I think next year will be really interesting. But if I were SEC people, I might not get too high and mighty about where things are going in college football in the next year or two, because I think they're changing in ways in which it's going to be pretty hard to predict, and the world probably isn't going to totally revolve around SEC football as far as the college game is concerned in the next few years. And it's going to be fun. I think you might look like a genius if you talk up Pac-12 football next couple of years.
All right. Well, Dan, thanks again for coming on and sharing the insights and everyone else. Thank you for tuning in. We apologize for having it late. I was coming back from Palm Springs, so we didn't get to do the show Monday morning, but this will be up Monday early evening. But thanks again, Dan.
I enjoyed it. Thank you, Ron.
All right, everyone else, thanks again for tuning in to the Peristyle Podcast. Hope you enjoyed week one of USC Spring Football. We'll be back again next week talking more about USC Trojan football team.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. And don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your iPod or MP3 player for free. Just click the iTunes link on PeristylePodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.